And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is leadership. Each of my guests is explaining leadership, whether it's in business or in politics. My next guest is a political science professor at the University of North Texas. We'll dissect the GOP presidential candidates debate to see which candidate delivered the goods in the debate and who's the likely Republican nominee. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. And that's the same number that you'll use to call in for our two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe. I'll be giving those away to the fourth caller that calls in at 639-0008. Don't have to talk on the air. Just call in. Tommy will take your name and number, and we'll send those certificates off to you just in time for lunch today. My next guest, Dr. Matthew Eisbaugh-Soha, is a research focuses on American political institutions, including the presidency, Congress, bureaucracy, and the news media. His first book, The President's Speeches, Beyond Going Public, explores the impact of the president's signals on the adoption and implementation of public policy. Matthew has also been published in numerous trade journals in the political science arena. His latest book is titled Breaking Through the Noise, Presidential Leadership, Public Opinion, and the News Media Studies in the Modern Presidency. Joining us from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Matthew. How are you today?
Hi, great. How are you?
Well, wonderful to have you on the show. Love this topic. I would love to dissect the GOP candidate, the GOP debate. Let's dive right into it. Who, in your opinion, came out as the winner of the debate the day before yesterday?
Well, I think we need to look at it in terms of short and long term. I think in the short term, Michelle Bachmann scored a number of major points, and I think even Rick Santorum did well in establishing his credibility with conservatives. But short-term victories, as Michelle Bachmann learned with the Iowa straw poll, are just that, short-term victories. I think the bigger winner here is Mitt Romney, because there was enough damage done to Rick Perry in perhaps sort of a sense that with his early poll showing that he was going to be the presumptive front runner, have the inside track at the nomination. I think Romney benefits from all of his colleagues ganging up and beating up Rick Perry quite a bit.
Well, it appeared that way to me, that Governor Romney and Republican Representative Bachmann came out swinging at Governor Perry. How did that strategy work for those candidates, do you think?
Well, I think Romney needed to do this. I think Romney is seen as more moderate than conservative. I think there's a tendency to look at Romney as somebody who might be more intellectual, aloof, having policy ideas, and not the type of individual who will go out and really stand up for himself. And he doesn't have the tone and sort of the stature really to do that as much. But I think his effort to attack Perry and really separate himself from Rick Perry and take on Rick Perry directly is an important strategy for him winning the nomination.
All right, so he has scored some points there. How did Perry fare in all of this? Because after all, the attention was all turned on him. And you know what they say in publicity, I don't care what you say about me as long as you spell my name right. Did that have any sort of halo effect for Rick Perry?
Well, I think Rick Perry is still establishing himself. The early poll results, there was a lot of uncertainty about the rest of the field. People have liked what they've heard from Rick Perry. I think it exposed some weakness in terms of his substance on different policies. I think we see that he is still more complicated than just a Tea Party conservative with his positions on immigration, for instance. But he's going to have to continue to develop a message of economic growth in the state of Texas and demonstrate that he is the best and most electable candidate in an Obama Republican candidate race in 2012.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Eisbaugh-Soha. He's a professor at the University of North Texas, and we are dissecting the GOP debate. And let's dive into it, because there were some very remarkable quotes that came out of this, Matt, that I'd like to explore with you just a little bit. First one was Governor Rick Perry. He called the Federal Reserve Governor Ben Bernanke his actions as treasonous. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Federal Reserve to be used for political purposes, that it would be almost treasonous. I think that is a very clear statement of fact. I am not a fan of the current chairman allowing that Federal Reserve to be used to cover up bad fiscal policy by this administration. And that, I will suggest to you, is what we have seen. It is a travesty that young people in America are seeing their dollars devalued in what we don't know if it was political or not because of the transparency issue. But I stand by this, that we need to have a Fed that is working towards sound monetary policy that creates a strong dollar in America, and we do not have that today.
All right, Matt. Treason, I mean, really, let's go back to Civics 101. Treason is when you have conscious action against your government, and it's punishable by death. How much of that was hyperbole? How much of that was over the top? And did that help Rick Perry in any way to make that kind of a statement?
It's all rhetoric. It's the type of rhetoric Perry uses to rally Tea Party type supporters. There are a lot of people on the right wing in the United States who dislike the Fed, and when you use that kind of rhetoric, you know you're going to get on the news, and you know people are going to talk about it. I think it's one thing to have if this stimulates a conversation about the effectiveness of the Fed, I think that's worthwhile. I think that people need to take a look and take a step back and think about how, you know, 10 years ago, the Fed could do no wrong, and that was the reason for economic growth in the 90s, right? Not the
early 2000s.
Not the Democratic president. And so I think that, you know, hitting the Fed for, you know, political points, it might work for some people. I think most people realize that the Fed is looking at these issues, complicated economic and financial issues, and trying to do what's best for the nation.
Well, I think that's the point, too, Matt, that these are complicated economic issues, and to reduce them down to a simple statement like that really does a disservice to the complexity that our financial system is facing today. So I found that rather, I'm searching for the words, but it's too simplistic, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think also in a democracy, we want responsiveness and openness, but some of these things, decisions by experts can be useful. Most people have no idea what quantitative easing is or what it would do. And, you know, I might be among them, but I think that these complicated issues don't necessarily lead to better solutions just because more people are looking over the shoulder of the Federal Reserve.
Fair enough. My guest is Dr. Matthew Eshbaugh-Soha. We're talking about the GOP political debate. Let's stick with Governor Perry, if we can, for just a minute. Not picking on him because he's from Texas, I want you to know, Matt. It's just he had so many different people hurling things at him.
Yeah.
And the candidates attacked him on his stance for mandating HPV vaccination for girls in Texas. HPV stands for human papillomavirus, for those people who don't know what those initials stand for. Some allege that he or a member of his staff was influenced by big pharma money in making that decision. How will this impropriety or even the appearance of impropriety impact Governor Perry?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. One, he made a decision that makes conservatives unhappy, mandating this particular vaccine. The second problem is that there is a dubious money link here. I mean, Rick Perry said it was a $5,000 contribution, but a lot of Texas media have looked into this. National news organizations are tapping into this. It's a lot more than that. It may not be the quid pro quo that people like to draw from it, but there's an appearance of impropriety here that Rick Perry was effectively bought by this decision. And if you look at his conservative credentials, you know, politically it doesn't make any sense for him to do this. What was the other motivation behind it? I think that I think Rick Perry has a lot of explaining to do on this particular issue. It just doesn't smell right for a lot of people.
All right, that's a fair analysis of it. So if it hurt Rick Perry, which of his opponents did it help?
Well, again, I think, you know, Bachman got the uppercut in there, but I think it helps Romney the most. He seems to be, I think, with some question at the top of the polls about who's most electable. Bachman might have the best conservative credentials, but Romney, and it's still, I think it's shaping up to be a battle between Perry and Romney, and if Perry gets hurt, I think that helps Romney.
Well, let's talk about the battle between Perry and Romney, and I'm going to come at this back door, so stick with me on it. First, I want to talk about a quote from Ron Paul, who is a former practicing physician. He was asked a hypothetical question about a 30-year-old man lapsing into a coma. Let's listen to what Ron Paul had to say.
You're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what, I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy, I don't need it. but, you know, something terrible happens. All of a sudden, he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma,
well,
for example?
Who
pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of him.
What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. Yeah. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of him. We never turned anybody away from the hospital, and we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high. The cost is so high, we cause a dump it on the government, becomes a bureaucracy, it becomes special interest, it kowtows to the insurance companies and the drug companies. Then on top of that, you have the inflation. The inflation devalues the dollar. We have lack of competition. There's no competition in medicine. Everybody's protected by licensing. We should actually legalize alternative health care, allow people to practice what they want.
Well, that was the full statement, Matt, and I wanted to play the full statement because the media has jumped on this and only played a portion of his statement.
Yeah.
And the portion where the guy asks, are you going to just let him die? And that's pretty much where the conversation ends. I wanted it to go on and say, at least in his experience, the church helped out, and that's how it worked together. But the point of it is this. How will that statement, whether it's taken in whole or in part, how is that going to help or hurt Congressman Paul?
Well, I think Congressman Paul has a limited audience, and his supporters agree with that type of statement. It's a very libertarian statement. I think it's a very honest statement. I think when we talk about health care costs, there are decisions that people don't want to talk about, decisions that people don't want to make in a world of limited resources. But I don't think it's not really going to help him or hurt him in that sense that I don't see him as somebody who can really rise up, you know, beyond maybe, you know, 20-25% in the polls. It might be something that endears him to libertarians and to Tea Party supporters. I think it certainly is an important discussion that we should have about the reality of the cost of health care and how these things play out in real life, that we make decisions and should we be held responsible for the decisions that we make. But again, I think given his level of support, I think it's a toss-up whether it helps or hurts him.
Well, Matt, you know, here's the back door to get to the question that I wanted to ask. Because Congressman Ron Paul narrowly came in second to Michelle Bachmann in the straw poll in Iowa.
Sure.
So why is it then that the mainstream media really depicts this as a two-person race, Mitt Romney versus Governor Perry? How can the media just dismiss both Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann after their strong showings in Iowa?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. They don't fit the typical candidate. Perry and Romney tend to. I think the media coverage of the long primary season is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, there are a lot of candidates and a lot of information. Media can narrow on a two or three candidates and help us simplify the process. But on the other hand, in a democracy, we should be the ones gathering that information and researching that ourselves. And I think even though most people are going to look for the shortcuts and then make a decision in that regard, people who truly want to be informed can hear, watch the debates directly. There are plenty of them. Do additional research on candidates' positions and make up their own mind. But the formula for focusing on Romney and Perry in 2011 and 2012 is no different than focusing on similar frontrunners in past elections.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Eshbaugh-Soha, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, and we're talking about the GOP debates. Now, what is it, since the media plays such an important role in this, Matt, what is it that the media looks for when they anoint a candidate?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. One is going to be money. Who's raising money? Now, that's the interesting question about Ron Paul, because he's raised a lot of money and he's still not getting the credibility. So money's important. Also the polls. Whoever's leading in the polls tends to get the most coverage. And there are some other obscure factors that you know, perhaps in terms of novelty. You know, Ron Paul ran in 2008, so maybe we have a better sense of him. He's not that interesting or new. Maybe he's already been vetted. That could be one reason why Michelle Bachmann got a lot of attention early on. But typically it's those money in terms of fundraising, polling results, and then also these debates contribute to both those in terms of performance, generates additional media coverage, and if it's favorable, then candidates raise more money, and if it's favorable, they tend to do better in the polls. And then they just kind of feed off of each other until we get to the primaries where voters actually cast their ballots. And we know that what we call here, now that we're in the what we call the invisible primary, isn't the best predictor. Howard Dean in 2004, for instance, or Hillary Clinton in 2008 as the front runners. You know, it's very early. This is how things are shaping up right now. Ultimately, we've got to see who ends up winning those early primaries and caucuses.
My guest is Matthew Eshbaugh Soha, professor of political science. So here's the question for you. The Republican Party often signals in advance who their candidate is going to be based on the previous convention and the previous election cycle. So based on past history, Governor Mitt Romney appears to be the likely GOP nomination. Who do you see becoming the Republican nominee based on the early media coverage and the presentation of the candidates so far?
Boy, you know, that's a really good question. Asking a political science to predict the future is a tough one. I think, you know, Perry has a lot going for him. I've always been skeptical just because I don't think he's really been tested in Texas. But if he's able to fend off these early criticisms and deal with some of these issues, I think he's a very strong candidate. But as you point out, Mitt Romney had been the front runner. Republicans tend to look towards front runners. With the primary calendar, the number of candidates appealing to different constituencies within the Republican Party, that it seems to be more fragmented than in years past, you could have a situation where the rules of the game, the distribution of delegates in various primaries, can benefit somebody that we don't expect to win the nomination. 2008, you know, John McCain was not a favorite of conservatives, but was able to win the nomination in part because he was somewhat different than the more conservative candidate. So, you know, I would give the edge right now to Romney, but anything can happen. We'll see what the primaries and caucuses show earlier next year.
Anything can happen, and it often does. Remember, Ronald Reagan in 1980 was a dark horse candidate going into that and then became a two-term president. My guest has been Matthew Eshbaugh Soha, political science professor and author of the book Breaking Through the Noise. Matthew, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would read good newspapers like the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal. I think they do a good job of addressing some of these issues. Of course, they're free to read my book, which is available on various websites on the Internet as well.
And also available at Bank of Books here in Ventura. Two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. Matt, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.